people have lost their eyes over this. You know, I know a few stories came back to me where it was too late for people and they had to lose their eye. Just whatever was in the back of my head to get it seen to, and probably Avril getting on to me as well to get it seen to, I just got lucky, you know.
Welcome to The Gab, a fortnightly podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thank you once again for clicking and downloading. This is episode 5. Deadlines are second nature to Donegal's Jason Byrne. As a sports journalist with the Irish Sun, he knows only too well how precious time is. Having a close-knit family, a wonderful fiancé, house plans and upcoming nuptials, life couldn't get much better. Until an appointment with an optician unearthed something sinister. Something that would take him on an unexpected journey. Jason sat with me and shared his story. Hi everybody, and you're very welcome into The Gab. And today I'm speaking with Jason Byrne. He's had a crazy couple of months and he's going to explain the whole lot to us. Jason is a sports journalist with the Irish Sun. And Jason, thanks a lot for taking the time to have a chat with me today.
No problem, Ronan.
Good to have you. And thanks very much indeed to the Maldron Hotel here as well in Sandy Road for accommodating us in this beautiful area for this chat as well. Nice and chilled and relaxed, exactly the way we like it. Jason, first of all, a little bit of background about yourself. That is not a Galway accent. Where are you from?
No, I'm from Killybegs in Donegal, Ronan. But as you know, I spent a long part of my life here in Galway. It'll always be a part of home for me. So I'm living in Athlone now, not far up the road. So I get back in once every few weeks. It's great.
Good stuff. Now, you and I know each other from a different lifetime as well.
Yeah.
Because you were working in Galway FM. What exactly was your post there?
It was a bit of everything, Ronan. As you know, I was mainly doing sport. I was out doing matches at the weekends, reporting to the one and only Ollie Turner, talk about a laugh. And then during the week, I was doing bits of everything, sound engineering, pre-recording shows, this, that and the other, whatever the lads threw at me. So, yeah, I was there for 6 years all in all, from 2009 to 2015. It was a great, great time.
Because we were a little like ships in the night, because obviously I was kind of starting up when you were finishing up with the radio station. So we only got a chance to maybe have a chat on a few occasions. But fair play to you. You were great in showing me the ropes on a few occasions that I definitely needed that little. It's nice to be able to go to somebody at times to whisper in their ear and say, look, I haven't a clue. I'm out of my depth here. Is there any chance of having a chat? And you being the guy that you are always gave me that helping hand that I needed. And thank you. Family-wise, who's in your family, first of all?
There's six of us. There's me parents, and then I have a brother and two sisters. The baby's in Australia. She's actually there 2 years today. So I was actually sending her a message there last night saying, okay, time to come home. So she's been stuck out there all through COVID, but she's having a great time. She's in Sydney. My brother's here in Galway. He's working at Medtronic. My sister's based here in Galway too. She's a manager in the Kilkenny shop down in Quay Street there. So if anyone wants to go in and wreck her head, feel free. Mum and Dad are at home. Mum's a very proud Tyrone woman, which causes a lot of crack in the house. And Dad's a fisherman. So, yeah.
You're busy out. Would you regard yourself as a close family?
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah.
Very, very close.
Yeah, very close, yeah.
And then, obviously, speaking of relationships and stuff like that, you have a wonderful lady. Let us know who that is.
I do, yeah. That's Avril, my fiancé. We're getting married next August. Been together nearly 5 years now. Yeah, she's great. She's been brilliant. Don't know how she puts up with me at times, but we're getting on great. Building a house this year at some stage, hopefully, and getting married next year. So it'll be all go now for the next while.
Yeah, you have a very busy couple of years ahead of you. Now, as I said, you're in the sports journalism in the Irish Sun. And tell us about that. A lot of pressures, no doubt, because you have fixtures, you have things to write up, things to audio pieces, whatever. Tell us a bit about the job.
Yeah, it's great, Ronan, for a start. It's mainly GAA I do. So like every weekend you're out at an intercounty match or a club match, or you're somewhere, you're all over the country really, which is why being based in Athlone's great, because you've so much within reach. Day to day then, people ask me what I do during the week. God, I could be in bed till 10 or 11 in the morning. I hope the boss isn't listening. But there's always something happening. There's always a fallout from the weekend. Like last weekend, they're a perfect example. You had Tyrone playing Armagh, you had 5 red cards, and you've always big focus here in Galway hurling at the minute with Henry Shefflin after coming in, and you know, big talk at the minute about Dublin's downfall. They haven't won a game
Against Kerry. Yeah.
So there's always something to keep you.
And of course, PJ as well. Our Pádraig Joyce, happy out at the moment. Has a great panel around him and a great management team as well. So they're happy out there. So let's put it this way: deadlines are extremely important to you. Obviously, you have to have certain things in at certain times.
Yeah.
But let's call a spade a spade. Deadlines are very well, but you pretty much had a deadline when you got news you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
And your whole world pretty much went on hold. And deadlines pretty much went on hold.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us what happened.
So it was last summer, Ronan. Like, obviously, I'd been... The GAA just started back up after the pandemic. And I was back in full flow with work. And the European Championships were in the TV. So I was constantly watching sport. And I just noticed something wasn't right with my vision. So I was kind of humming and hawing. I was like, God, I might need new glasses. You know, I'd only got new glasses the year before and stuff, just before I moved out of Dublin. And, you know, I was like, no, something isn't right. And I remember I went down, I think Waterford were playing Tipperary down in Parky Cove in the All-Ireland Hurling quarterfinal. And I went down with Donica Boyle, who writes for the Independent, great fella. Me and him were carpooling, usual crack going down in the car. And I remember coming home with him and saying, God, something isn't right with my vision. Like, you know, I must fucking... messing around there with glasses and whatnot, like I must get it checked out. And then the August bank holiday weekend came up, and I was out working somewhere, and I just opened my laptop and I clicked for an eye test and Specsavers and Athlone, who are one of the real heroes in this piece, I can tell you. So the August bank holiday Monday, I went into them, and there was a wonderful optician in there called Kate, and she done, I'm sure people are familiar who've been to opticians lately, that they have these big machines now that can do a deep scan in your eye. And I could see her looking at the scan, and she was like, there's something, I knew that something wasn't right here, you know. And she said she couldn't tell, she knew what it was, but she couldn't tell me what it was. So she basically said, there's something putting pressure on your retina, and you're going to have to go to the eye and ear hospital in Dublin. And I was like, oh, okay, grand, when will I do that? Like, and she was like, oh, I think you should go today.
Okay, so you heard immediate, you knew there was something in it.
Yeah, alarm bells were ringing here already. So she said, I'm going to ring them. Sit tight here, I'm going to ring them and make sure they see you today. And because it was a bank holiday Monday, obviously, maybe they weren't playing ball with her initially, but she made sure I got seen to that day. She was remarkable. So I think I was in to her around lunchtime, and just before 3:30, I was sitting in the Eye and Ear Hospital in Dublin on Adelaide Road, just off Leeson Street. So they done all these scans and ultrasounds, and they basically do an ultrasound on your eye like they do on a lady that's expecting. They put the gel in your eyeball, and they rub the pen thing over your eyeball, which is very uncomfortable, but they were doing all that. And there was two or three doctors there, and they were kind of messing around, and they told me there was a lesion on my eye, which is basically a lump. So that's all I was told that day. And because it was a bank holiday Monday, I was told that the main specialist for this fella in the country, Mr. Horgan, wasn't present because it was a bank holiday, and that I would have to get an appointment to see him. So I had to come back, to wait another week, sit tight, wondering what the hell was going on. So I came back into him the following Monday, and he went through the same rigmarole with the ultrasounds and the scans and everything else. And he called me in, and he said, I had what's called an optical melanoma. And I was like, all right, what's that?
Yeah.
And he said, it's a cancerous lump, and it's 4.4 millimetres in diameter. And I nearly hit the floor, as you can imagine. And I was like, what is this? Like, you know, looking for an explanation. And he was like, you know, it's extremely rare. They don't know what causes it, but they can cure it. So this is the Monday after the bank holiday, Monday, a week later, per se. And that Friday the 13th, he had me on the operating table on St. Luke's to insert a radiation plaque on my eyeball, which sits on top of where the tumour is and zaps it with radiation for 4 solid days.
Oh,
and then the following Tuesday, he removed the plaque again. And the radiation's still working at the moment. The lump's still there, and it's down to just over 3 millimetres in diameter now. But he assures me everything's going to plan. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, really. So it was bang, bang, bang. It was crazy. Like, you know, I know people were isolating because of COVID and everything else, but I had to isolate in a room in St. Luke's because of the radiation that was in my head at the time, just to protect the staff and stuff. So, but look, I was happy as Larry. That was the weekend Mayo beat Dublin, and the Premier League was after starting, and the nurses were throwing food at me left, right and centre. So I had a grand old time at the end of it all.
The typical sports journalist get back to sports straight away. Let's just go back a little bit. Obviously, you heard those words coming out of the surgeon's mouth.
Yeah.
What goes through your head when you hear the word cancer?
The absolute worst, to be honest, especially in my own family history, because the Christmas Eve before that, we lost my Uncle Seamus.
Okay.
He passed on Christmas Eve, and then just over 2 weeks later, his sister, my Auntie Moya, passed as well from cancer. We lost my cousin Sharon in 2011. She was only 40. A couple of my best friends have lost their mothers through cancer as well. My Uncle Cahill on my mum's side passed from cancer in November 2019, just a couple of months before COVID came. So you can imagine after losing so many people so close that the worst goes through your head. And I remember myself and Avril had booked to go out to Inishbofin for a night or a couple of nights. And we drove after I was diagnosed that Monday. We were meant to go. And I said, we'll still go. And we went to Inishbofin, but I was just running away from it. It was constantly in my mind. Like, the only time you had peace is when you slept. And when you woke up again, the dread came over you again because this thing was facing you. But once you went into St. Luke's and it was explained and I went under the knife, I was actually quite content for a couple of weeks, believe it or not. It was kind of like, you know, you go into kind of a defence mode and you choose to fight it.
Yeah. And it's the natural thing to kick in.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. God, like, you know, there was people in St. Luke's there who were facing a much more grave situation than me. And, you know, what happened to me taught me that you learn that every single person has their cross to bear. Like, the amount of my friends who came to me and told me about certain things that were going on in their lives that I had no idea about. And you see the other patients in St. Luke's there, like, you know, at the same time I had a lot to be grateful for. And COVID was rampant at the time as well. And, you know, I'm not crying poor mouth here. I know how lucky I am because there was so many people around me in that environment who were facing much more serious battles than I was. So despite the hell I had to climb, you know, there was a lot to be thankful for as well. Like, Arvo was incredible. She was by my side through the whole thing. My family, my friends. You know, you realise how lucky you are when something like this comes your way as well. And that's still the case, you know.
You do. And I suppose, as you said there a second ago, a very important thing that when you opened up to people, obviously you would have felt quite vulnerable at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you opened up to somebody, they felt that they could open up to you.
Yeah.
Because obviously you were probably both feeling quite vulnerable and maybe passing stories on to each other. And is that with both patients as well? Were you talking to obviously patients that were going through cancer treatment at the time in the hospital? Did you find that they were opening up to you about their issues? Or was it mainly friends?
It was mainly friends, Ronan, because I didn't get to interact with too many patients in St. Luke's. I was only kind of seeing people from a distance and that, and you're under no illusions how sick they are. But because of the treatment I had, the fact that I had to isolate in a room, I didn't get to interact with many other patients.
Of course, and COVID as
well. Yeah, COVID as well. You know, we were being tested every day, you know. The staff in there were remarkable. They're the real heroes and all this as well, you know. But yeah, it was mainly friends, to answer your question.
Yeah.
Friends opened up to me about different things. Like, and it just really hit home that you never know the battle that's going on behind anybody's door. Do you know what I mean?
And you don't know what each day is going to bring out.
Yeah.
Brings its own story.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, obviously, when you heard that news, did you find that your life pretty much flashed, as they say? I know it's a bit of a cliched line, but did you find that your life flashed before your eyes? That you were kind of going, what's going to happen here? You know, I'm getting married. I have a wonderful family at home. Mm. You know, the house, obviously all these thoughts were in your head about the house, building the house, your job, your vision. Did you feel that you could lose your vision completely?
People have lost their eyes over this. You know, I know a few stories came back to me where it was too late for people and they had to lose their eye. Just whatever was in the back of my head to get it seen to, and probably Avril getting on to me as well to get it seen to, I just got lucky, you know. You know, it could have been really detrimental had I let this go. So I'm assured it's shrinking all the time. I've checkups every 4 months, but the crucial thing in this is the thing that I have likes to spread to your liver. And they did take a biopsy on the cells when I was under the knife. Mr. Horgan took a biopsy, and I'm told the biopsy's in the better end of things in terms
thankfully,
of potential spread. So the first liver scan was clear. I've got another one in a few weeks, and they're going to be every 6 months pretty much for the rest of my life. It's just something I'm going to have to deal with. And the anxiety leading up to them isn't the best at times. No. They're like, you know, sometimes it just hits you, God, I have this thing coming up. Do you know what I mean? Like, but
you just, obviously, you build up for the week or the 2 weeks before that, you know.
Yeah.
It's like going in for the exam, the school exam. You're going to flunk it pretty much before you get in at all in your own head.
Yeah.
So that's quite difficult. Now, obviously, you had to divulge that information to your other half. Or was she in with you when you were told by the doctor what the situation was?
She wasn't in with me when I was actually told the news, but when I was told the news, Mr. Horgan's nurse called Valerie. She was remarkable. She was just a huge support. She told me to go out and get Avril in straight away. So Avril came in, and Valerie went through everything with us from start to finish. And she gave us a booklet, and it's terrifying. Like, you know, it says cancer in the front of the booklet. Like, that's basically what it says. So, like, it's all these things are going through your head. Like, and then, like, after you get over the initial shock of dealing with it yourself, you stop feeling sorry for yourself, but you start feeling sorry for Avril, your parents, your siblings, your close friends. Like, we kept all this very in-house for the first couple of months, just to deal with it and get over the worst of it, really. That was a good move, you know. My family and my extended family were all a great support. Like, on my dad's side of the family, we lost my granny that February too, and God, I was praying to her flat out to get me through it, and I think she did, so.
And did you feel anger in there as well? Why me? Why, do you know, did you feel that kind of, because obviously, you know, with certain things like that, first of all, you have to deal with it, and you kind of go, bloody hell, why now? Why me? Yeah. You know, I'm starting my life with Avril here.
Mm-hmm.
Why now? Did that ever go through your head?
Yeah, it did. It did. Like, bits of everything, Ronan. Like, anger, anxiety, depression. Then you go into attack mode, saying you're going to beat it. Then you go into despair again, and anger does hit you at times, and you do have to control it and park it and move it to one side as quickly as possible. Like, it does hit you, though, and when it can hit you out of nowhere.
Of course, absolutely. Speaking of parking things, did you have to park the job for a while?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. I had an eye patch on me in the hospital. And my colleague Gordon was joking at me, his young lad's obsessed with pirates, and he was like, oh, Sam's going to think you're the
greatest
ever now. You're actually going to be a pirate. But they took the patch off me when I got out of the hospital, and then I just had to wear like a plastic shield at night to stop me pawing at the eye, because there was a couple of stitches on my eyeball. So I was told I would be out for about 2 months, but the day I was leaving St. Luke's, Mr. Horgan came in, and, you know, that was a big GA weekend. Like, Mayo after beating Dublin, and I was mad for road, mad to get back to work straight away, and the All-Ireland hurling final was coming up, and by pure chance, the season had been extended because Tyrone were due to play Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final, and that was postponed because Tyrone had COVID issues, so that set the whole season back for 3 weeks. So I actually ended up back at work at the All-Ireland football final on the 11th of September, which was that became my target, and I made sure I was in Croke Park that day, and I was.
The baptism of fire.
Yeah.
You went back into the thick of the action when it was heating up.
Yeah.
Do you feel now that you can obviously, you know, get rid of this, or do you feel that it's something you have to live alongside?
It's something I have to live alongside. The lump in my eye should be getting rid of, and I'm confident that it will be gone, because I am told that the radiation's still working hard in the background, and the lump's shrinking all the time, and eventually it will be gone. But the liver scans are something I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life, and you're just going into each one praying for a good result, really. You know, you have to make a few lifestyle changes. I'm going to have to cut back on the pints, watch my diet a bit more, all those things. So those are all the things you can do to fight it. What I had was so rare as well. You know, they told me that it just tends to crop up in Irish people, and you know, I have to be very careful in the sunlight now. You know, we're going to Tenerife in September. I'm going to have to, you know, I'm not going to be laying out for a tan to keep the shades on.
I was just about to say, you'll have the sunnies on.
Yeah, yeah. Keep the shades on, keep the baseball cap on, yeah. Stay under the umbrella, do you know what I mean? But that's fine with me. It doesn't bother me. It would bother a few of my mates now. A few of them like their...
they like their points.
they like their tans and they like their booze and everything else. But look, I'll be grand.
Yeah, I suppose the social aspect of things obviously has to change, you know, and stuff like that. But living alongside it is something, as you said, you're going to have to do. So obviously you've gone into so many hospitals at this stage, so many consultants' rooms and all that, and you've told me about the anxiety at times. Did you have any setbacks along the line that you kind of went in and you kind of thought, well, this was a good, if you want to call it a semester, this was a good semester now, things were good. Did you get any knockbacks along the way?
I did a couple of weeks ago when I went back in for my latest day check. I thought the lump would be gone. I thought it would be completely destroyed and we'd be away and the eye checks would be over, but it's not gone. But, you know, they were assuring that everything's going to plan. They knew I was maybe a bit disappointed and a bit frustrated because we're into February now and, you know, I had surgery in August on Friday the 13th. Like, it's a good thing I'm not too suspicious. But, yeah, that was a bit of a reality check. It was a bit of a setback, you know. But bar that, everything went according to plan. You know, I was back driving within 2 months. I was back exercising, swimming, playing soccer, everything else. So that was good. Like, so by and large, there haven't been too many kickbacks. But like, after the rigmarole I've been through, you're always kind of prepared for one if it comes along, and you're just going to have to jump that hurdle. So
yeah,
just going to have to see what happens.
What's the story with pain? Obviously, when anybody hears of anything good in their eye, even dust in your eye can drive you absolutely bananas. An ingrown hair, eyelash, anything like that. When I hear of stitches in the eye, what is going on there? What's the feeling? Is it a crazy sensation? What is it?
Yeah, it's really uncomfortable, Roland. That's the best way I can say it. It's actually not that painful because I was on two different sets of drops and a cream, and all of this stuff is going into your eye 3 times a day to keep it clean, to
keep it moist as well, obviously. Yeah,
keep it moist, speed up the healing process, all that. So when all that stuff's going into your eye, it keeps it healthy, it keeps it building up. Like, God, I don't know when I came out of hospital first, my eye looked like, it just looked like a big red mess, to be honest. But like, it healed quite well. Like, the white started coming back and your pupils are just purely dilated. And like, they eventually settle as you wean yourself off the drops as well. One of the stitches actually wasn't playing ball, and I had to go back into my first day. The stitches were meant to dissolve by themselves. So one of them dissolved normally, but the other one just chose to stay there. So when I went back in for my first eye check, the doctor literally got a pair of tweezers and picked it out of my eyeball, which was, that was horrible.
Anesthetic, no doubt.
No.
Oh.
So a good strong drop, but that was about the height of it.
You needed a good strong drop after that,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you, just like the rest of us, take, or did you take your senses for granted? Now that you know how important your visual health is, were you like the rest of us and just said, yeah, it's great, everything's fine? You were living a very, very normal, natural life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you probably took everything for granted. I can see, I can hear, I can talk, I can touch, I can feel. How did you feel when one of those senses was under pressure?
It's hard. It's so hard to kind of explain. Like, you just go through every sort of emotion. Like, I'm so happy I can wake up and see now. I'm so happy I can see the TV. And like, my vision has been affected. Don't get me wrong.
Is it still, is your vision as it stands now affected? So,
oh yeah,
long distance, kind of short sight, that kind of an idea.
Yeah. So it was my right eye where I had the condition. So if I close my left eye now and I look at you, you're a bit blurry there. Like,
that might be a good thing.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. But I'm going for new glasses in a few weeks, and Mr. Horgan said to me that, you know, they'll probably be able to improve things. And Kate in Specsavers in Athlone actually called me up about a month post-op as well to see how I was doing. She told me to come into her as well, and she said, you know, people that pop up with this condition, they, you know, the opticians do manage to improve their sight a bit again when they go in for a new prescription. So I'll know about that in a couple of weeks, so fingers crossed. But it's not the worst. I'm driving, still able to see who got what score and whatever. So it's those are the main things. Like, but yeah, you would never take your senses for granted again. Like, you know, and just the message I would like to give people now is to just, if you notice anything that's ever off with yourself, please be vigilant. Please get it seen to. Don't brush it to one side, because it's just vital. You never know. Like, you know, a headache could be something more sinister. A sore leg could be something more sinister. You just never know. And I've really realised that, and I've been trying to hammer that message home to my friends and my family. And, you know, if this helps one person.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was hoping for all of these podcasts, to be honest with you, Jason, that we give everybody a clear message as to how anything can happen to anybody at any particular time.
Yeah.
And that life changing, you know, thankfully for you, you're still extremely independent and will be, which is brilliant and great news. But to some people out there that maybe haven't visual health problems at the moment, you know, they may feel something, a tingle someplace, whatever the case may be, or, you know, to go and get it checked. And don't be the man about it. I think we're both men here.
That's it.
And I think we can honestly say that a trip to the doctor at times, look at, I have a busy day ahead. I haven't got time to go to the doc.
Yeah. Yeah. Make that time.
Yeah.
And do it, like, you know, because you just never know.
And don't be expecting your partner to be constantly telling you to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Avril did do that a bit too, but, you know, I knew in the back of my head this had to be done next. So.
Yeah. And did you sense, because obviously you felt discomfort at the time, did you sense something that you kind of went, it's something minor or it's something major? What went through your head at the time? Were you kind of slightly afraid maybe to go to the doc in case they told you something? Or was it something that you kind of went, look, it's something small. I might have got a little bit of dirt in the back of it or whatever.
I honestly thought it was something small, Ronan, between flat out watching sport on the TV because the Euros were on, as I said, the GA was back, going to work, a lot of screen time on the laptop. I was ghostwriting an autobiography for someone at the time as well, so I was at the laptop morning, noon and night. So I just thought it was a combination of all that. You know yourself, working from home during the pandemic, you're at the screen a lot more. You're, you know, just from morning, noon till night, looking at the phone stupidly, scrolling through the tablet, all that. Like, we're surrounded by technology now. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, a year and a half of working at home and being surrounded by screens all the time, I just thought it was a combination of all those things. I never in my wildest dreams thought it would be anything to do with the big C or...
You probably thought it was visual fatigue, pretty much. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I just thought...
But the big C frightened you, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Big time.
Do you find now that... Obviously, I'll just go back a small little bit for a second. You mentioned that it's an Irish thing as such that you have, or that the doctor or the surgeon knew that it was an Irish thing. What else did he feel that it could have come from? Was it hereditary? Was it something that can just literally happen? Or what are the other influences towards your eye issues?
It's just he told me, like, in the simplest terms possible, that they do not know what causes this. And it's something that just seems to pop up more prominently in people in Ireland and the UK, where maybe we don't get warm weather all the time and we're not as used to sunshine. I definitely think from what they were telling me that it's something to do with sunlight. Because a melanoma is a skin cancer.
Yeah.
You can get a melanoma on your baby finger, you know, and as I found out, you can get one behind your eyeball. It wasn't hereditary. Because as I said, you know, I've been surrounded by cancer in my family, and my Auntie Mary on my dad's side passed away there just a few weeks ago too. So she had cancer in her lung. So that was another big setback as well. And, you know, another big reality check is losing her was very tough. But it wasn't hereditary. And, you know, I had to go through all my family
history. Of course, all your checks, of course.
My liver specialist and everything else. Yeah. That wasn't easy either, because when he had the list drawn up, there was far too many names on it, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but what I had wasn't connected to anything
like that
my relatives went through. So it's just a very rare thing. But I think they have around 100 cases in Ireland a year. But for it to crop up in a male under 40 was specifically rare, because it normally does pop up in people of an older generation. So I don't know. Like, was I, you know, did I go to Spain too much when I was younger? Maybe I shouldn't have went to Ibiza on that stag party. I don't know.
Well, you see, I suppose no more than everything else, you become a private detective when certain things happen, and you're always trying to find out why, where, when, how, all that kind of an idea. I'm sure that went through your head as well.
Yeah.
Did I personally cause this myself, or was it something that just literally happened? Now, you said you're a close family at home in Killybegs. How did Mum and Dad take it?
They were very brave, considering what they'd both been through in recent times before that. You know, I'm sure privately they were horrified. Like, you know, I was worrying about them more than I was worrying about myself, and worrying about Avril more than I was worrying about myself. But they were very brave. They put on a very brave front, and they were very supportive, you know. My parents are remarkable people. They really are. I've really realised that in the last couple of years. And between them and Avril and my siblings, God, I don't know what I would have done. I would have been really lost, and it would have been rock bottom stuff. But God, they were with me every step of the way, every single one of them. Thank God. So
yeah,
they were great, remarkable. You know,
what's the future for Jason Byrne?
God, there's a lot happening now. The autobiography that I wrote for a well-known GA man. I can't say too much about it at the minute.
I was hoping to get an exclusive, people, but it's not happening.
You can have it. You can have it in a couple,
I'll get a copy.
Maybe another 2 months.
Good stuff.
But that's coming out later in the year. Should be getting the house off the ground. Just outside that loan. We're getting married in August 2023. There's loads to look forward to.
It's looking very bright.
Yeah,
it really is.
I'm going to do something big for charity as well. I plan on cycling from Dublin to Athlone, or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe like around August, September. I might do it like to coincide with when I was in the hospital or something like that, just to kind of to mark a year on and just raise funds and raise awareness of what I went through, and hope that it can help other people to just be vigilant if anything comes up, not even in relation to what I had, but anything to do with your
health. Yeah. Of course. And let's put it this way, when it comes to your health, age means nothing. Mm. We know from young children with cancer to middle-aged to into your 40s and on, cancer doesn't wait for a particular age. It can happen at any particular time. So we need to be vigilant and mindful of that.
Yeah.
As well. Well, I just want to take this opportunity to say a huge thank you. Thanks for reaching out, first of all, because I didn't realise, obviously, when you finished up with Galway FM at the time, and obviously you were doing different things and gone into a different career, even though we might, you know, say hello in passing when it comes to an old text or something like that on social media, I didn't realise that you were going through all of this. And I just want to say you're seriously brave. You were always a really nice guy anyway. Always, never. You don't think all people are lovely people. You really are. But I just want to wish you the best in the future with your house, with your wonderful partner who will be your wife next year, with your very close-knit family as well. And whatever the future brings, I wish you the very, very best. So, Jason, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks very much, Ronan. Really enjoyed it. Best luck, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. The next podcast will be out on March the 24th.